call the commission meeting April 25th, 2019 to order 10:01 a.m.
Make sure your mics are on.
When I ask Commissioner Gonzalez to lead us in the invocation and presentation of colors and place.
If you would, please allow us the opportunity to have a moment of silence for a passing of one of our own. Lloyd Mosley is an active Dallas Fire Department member, passed this last week from leukemia, and he was laid to rest this past Tuesday. So join me in just a few moments of silence in his memory. Father God, we thank you for this glorious day that you have provided to each and every one of us here today. We thank you for allowing us the opportunity as fire officials across this great state that you allow us to live in and work in. Lord, thank you for that. We thank you for the opportunities to serve your people and serve the residents and the citizens of Texas. Lord, we thank you so much for bestowing that honor to us and allowing us to provide that service. Lord, please be with those that have suffered so much in the last couple of weeks from severe weather incidents across our state. Please be with them and their families and those loved ones that were lost throughout the storms. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
If you would please join me in the pledge to the United States flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Texas flag.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
All right, roll call.
Commissioner Anderson?
Here.
Commissioner Cortez?
Here.
Commissioner Doster? Commissioner Gonzalez?
Here.
Commissioner Jones?
Here.
Commissioner Garza?
Present.
Commissioner McMakin? Commissioner Moore?
Here.
Commissioner Morgan?
Here.
Commissioner Perez, present. Commissioner Sharma?
Here.
Commissioner Stillman?
Here.
And Commissioner Tull?
Here.
All right. Commissioner Doster is out with some medical this morning, and I haven't heard from Jody. You've heard from Commissioner McMakin.
Unable to make it.
All right, item number three.
Adoption of the commission meeting minutes of January 16, 2019 and January 17, 2019.
Move for adoption.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Motion opposed? Motion carries. Item number four.
The Budget and Strategic Plan Subcommittee may meet on April 25th, 2019 during the commission meeting and provide a report for discussion and possible action relating to the recommendations developed by the subcommittee, including but not limited to modifications to the agency operating budget and strategic plans.
Anything from the Budget and Strategic Plan Subcommittee? In your packet, you do have operating budget. Anybody have any questions or anything from commission personnel?
Now, I might mention that you should have a handout there that actually is a more recent report as well through the 1st of April. Take a look at it.
I'll give you a few minutes to look through that, and then if you have any questions.
Looks good.
Any questions? Okay, hearing none, we will move item number five.
Item five, reports from fire service interest groups and agency on matters relating to organizational purposes, functions, and objectives, including but not limited to the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, the Center for Public Safety Excellence, and the State Fire Marshal's Office.
All right, we'll start with Texas Fire Chiefs Association.
Thank you, Chairman Moore, and good morning, Commissioners. I'm Betty Wilkes with the Texas Fire Chiefs Association. Just want to give you a really brief update on what our association's been doing. We're very active in the legislative session right now. We're hot and heavy. It's getting critical. One thing that is of interest to this body is we are heartily advocating the removal of the remainder of the rider for the Commission on Fire Protection, that $1.5 million. In the House budget, that $1.5 million was removed from their budget, and the Senate budget, it stayed in there. And so right now, the conferees for the budget are talking about it. So we've written letters and we're advocating to both of those entities. However, if they're going to leave the rider in the budget, if it comes out that way, we are asking that those monies be attributed to TIFMA's grants and things like that so that it can directly benefit the fire service who's paying into that. So that's one thing that we're doing among many, many other things that I'm sure you'll hear about. We're delivering 7 company officer symposium this year. We've got Daniel Deere, who is our chief of the curriculum. We've delivered 2 so far out of 7. And we're launching next week. Next month, we're going to launch our first second in command workshop, which is part of our succession planning for the next generation of fire chiefs. We do that annual fire chiefs retreat each year, which is a really great event. And we thought we would look to the second in command and do something for them and see if that would land and if that was something that they would benefit from. Additionally, we've got the EMS chief update and the academy coming up in Round Rock in June. And any other questions for me or what the chiefs have going on, I'm happy to address it. Again, there's an open invitation. If there's anything that the commission wants to push out communication-wise, we've got a really good channel to do that, and we're happy to do that for the commission. So,
anybody have any questions? Thank you very much for y'all's support on the rider. We
absolutely
appreciate that.
You bet.
All right. Texas State Firefighters Association, or Association of Firefighters.
Morning, Commissioners. Jim Reedy for the Texas State Association of Firefighters. Glenn is over, as you all know, working at the Capitol to make sure that this agency gets the funds it needs and to operate correctly. We have district representatives also working the halls over there in separate hearings and meetings. So he sends his apologies that he couldn't be here today. Our next event of note is our biannual convention. It's in McAllen this year, June 24th to 28th. It's hosted by the McAllen Local, IFF Local 2602. We do welcome guests to these conventions. There is a small guest fee to sit in the room on a really hard chair, but we still do welcome guests. So if any of the commissioners want to come down and see what it's all about, meet some people from the union locals around the state of Texas, you're more than welcome to do that. So field any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. The State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas. The Texas Fire Marshals Association. Texas Association of Fire Educators.
Good morning. I'm Steve Keller. I'm with the Texas Association of Fire Educators, and just like to announce that We finally have an official location for next year's conference. It'll be in Corpus Christi. The conference dates will be February 10th through 14th, and we're actively seeking presentations or speakers. If you're interested or someone, a department would like to present at next year's conference, you can do so by either contacting a board member through our website, or we'll have a location there where they can nominate someone to speak. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. The Texas A&M Forest Service. The National Fire Protection Association. Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts. The Center for Public Safety Excellence.
Good morning, Commissioners and members of the Texas Fire Service. My name is Leonard Chan. I'm the current chair for the Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium. The Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state to achieve excellence through continuous improvement, peer mentoring, and professional development. Much of the focus is providing support to departments pursuing Center for Public Safety Excellence Agency Accreditation Program. During the Excellence Conference held in Anaheim in March, San Antonio Fire Department became the ninth Texas Municipal Fire Department to become accredited. Three Department of Defense fire departments have also earned this distinction in Texas. The consortium held its annual in-person meeting in Jersey Village on April 8th. During the meeting, student groups from Rice University presented projects on apparatus placement and public education. The group on apparatus placement actually won first place in a statistics competition last week. Center for Public Safety Excellence headquarters staff also attended to discuss the development of the next edition of agency accreditation requirements, and Cedar Park Fire Department provided an overview of their risk assessment and standards of cover. At the meeting, I was re-elected chair. Randall Parr of Tomball was elected vice chair, and Roland DeGraw of Southlake Fire Department re-elected as secretary. These were all tough elections since we were all unopposed. Houston Fire Department hosted the Quality Through Improvement Through Accreditation course that same week, and it's the only basic course available in Texas this year. The course covered development of a community risk assessment, standards of cover, strategic plan, and self-assessment manual. We are currently entering the peer assessment season, with peer assessors being sent out across the country, and Cedar Park is scheduled for its peer assessor visit in May. We expect to have a strong presence at Fire Rescue International in August in Atlanta. Upcoming presentations for the consortium this year that have yet to be scheduled may include legislative updates, the upcoming sunset process, and South Lake Fire Risk Assessment and Standards Cover presentation. I'm willing to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. The State Fire Marshal's Office.
Fire Marshal. Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Orlando Hernandez, and I'm the State Fire Marshal. So if you've never seen me, I started the end of August. So and thanks, Mr. Rubin, for the invitation, and the chairman for the invitation to the meeting. Just a couple of things. For years, we were in the Hobby Building downtown, and we've recently moved out to 183 and Cameron Road. Is where the lab used to be. So we took over that office space. And so the fire marshal's office, everything that we do that was done at headquarters at Hobby Building has been moved out to that location. So we have ample parking, and we have meeting rooms that we don't have to share anymore. So a couple of things. One of the things I want to bring up, talk to the Commissioner of Insurance, Commissioner Sullivan, got a lot of questions about the scientific advisory working group, and whether we wanted to continue that program. And we are going to continue that program. We're rewriting some of the bylaws and rewriting of the contract. We're going to be doing other things. So that's going through legal. It's just the final step of that. So we'll be sending out applications. We're going to send notifications. So if anybody wants to join, it's going to be wide open. There's going to be no holdovers. It's just going to be everyone's going to apply. They'll go through probably a one-hour phone interview. So we're going to take new applicants, and we'll have a new panel. So I'm here for any questions. I'll be here for the rest of the meeting. So anything? I'm here to answer them.
Thank you.
Thanks
for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
All right, item number six.
Discussion and possible action concerning reports by the Commission representative to the Texas Fire School Advisory Board and by representatives of the Texas Engineering Extension Service regarding fire protection training provided by TEKS through its Emergency Services Training Institute. Mr. Gloria is not present. He advised that they had no meetings lately. That's why he's not here to give a report.
Okay. Item number seven.
Discussion and possible action regarding report from the Commission representative to the Homeland Security Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tim, did you want to touch on that? Or
I'm happy to. Yeah, I attended the meeting on I attended half the meeting on February 27th. I was able to make the first half of the meeting. I was present for a presentation by Megan Jenner with DPS, and she provided an overview of the strategic assessments that were recently done or that are under development by the DPS Intelligence and Counterterrorism Division. Again, one of those real eye-opening types of presentations. Also, Chuck Finney with TDEM discussed the status of TDEM in light of the recommendations from the governor's report that had come out several months ago. He also touched briefly on the legislative proposals that are currently underway over in the legislature with the potential of moving that group. Again, at this point, I think it's still all in process. Nothing firmed up, I think, at this point, as far as I know.
Well, I got word they did have a vote in the House yesterday, and it was unanimously approved.
Okay.
So now it has to go to the Senate.
The other half of their meeting was basically a group session where they were working on the threat and hazard identification and risk assessment, or THIRA, plan. And I unfortunately wasn't able to attend that portion of it.
Anybody have any questions? Okay, item number eight.
Discussion and possible action regarding report from the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee.
Okay, commissioners, in front of you, you'll have the slide presentation that will be delivered.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Danny Kistner, a member of the Health and Wellness Committee. The committee has been working very diligently on the behalf of the Texas Fire Service to bring you this presentation this morning, education on firefighter occupational cancer. And as a reminder, the mission of the Firefighter Health and Wellness Committee is to provide factual data and practical guidance regarding key areas of health and wellness to educate the commissioners and facilitate the development of action guides by individuals and departments, and also to give the commission latest academic information regarding firefighter health and wellness issues. We're going to break our presentation. We're going to keep it brief, but break up our presentation into three separate parts. Myself, Lieutenant Garcia from McAllen Fire Department, and Chief Meyer from the Houston Fire Department. And just to introduce our committee, if any members are present, please stand. Daniel Deer with Dallas Fire Rescue. Brett Ellis, Harris County ESD number 48. Joseph Becker, Sugarland Fire Department. Scott Thompson, the Colony Fire Department. Michael Meyer from Houston Fire Department. Dr. Sarah Janke from the Center for Fire Rescue and EMS Health Research. Christopher Call, Portland Fire Department. Stephen Green, Longview Fire Department. Dr. Lucas Garcia behind me, McAllen Fire Department, and Homer Javier Salinas Mission Fire Department. At the request of the commission, we have a diverse panel that represents all of Texas Fire Service from across the state. Right. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. Lucas Garcia.
Good morning, Commissioner. Thank you for having me.
So what we're going to do is we're going to cover some of the key points here that are necessary to understanding this ongoing topic, very pertinent discussions here that have been held by our committee. So according to data collected by the International Association of Firefighters, there's an alarming rate, or 61% of career firefighters, that can be credited to line of duty deaths since 2002. So we're going to go over the risk, and which is a 9% higher risk for firefighters in their diagnosis, but they are also at a 14% more likely to die from cancer. And then along with the information gathered, it's also indicating that a third of firefighters will experience cancer at some point in their lives. It's not clearly stated whether it's just in their career, but it does indicate throughout their lifetime. So we included that as well. And some of the key points, or some of the areas identified, are respiratory, digestive, and urinary. We also are going to see here in a little bit the graph, and we're going to indicate all the different types of cancer, but also mesothelioma among firefighters is doubled the reported rate for the general population. So some of the problems with research is going to be the manner in which data is collected. Simply like a fire report, it's only as good as the information inputted. So same thing with firefighter data collection on cancer. It's not formally defined as a line of duty death, though it's generally accepted as such within the fire service and some presumptive legislation. So also to follow up on this, it's voluntarily reported. So this is probably like the biggest thing that I talked about, and it's the issue with data collection is that it's voluntarily reported. And if we can't somehow push for it to be a different sense of reporting, then we're going to have skewed information, and the reporting isn't going to be as accurate as it could be. To go over some of the types of cancer that we're discussing and presenting to the commission, testicular cancer rates the highest with a two times a greater risk. And just a few of the other ones, mesothelioma, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's, skin, brain, and also malignant melanoma, which is a type of skin cancer, then also to include prostate, colon, and leukemia. So these are just the risks associated with the hazards in firefighting. So some background and some significance. We talked about, or we visited on, the age of plastics and the chemicals that are emitted through fires and are, we'll see here, that are absorbed, ingested with firefighters later, and how that happens. But it's also that the fire service was not too accepting of the research that was out there, and so it was kind of an accepted risk, if you so to speak, for firefighters in the fire service. And so the culture is what's next here. I don't want to say to blame, but it has a lot to do with the leadership, the older leadership that we've had, that just doesn't embrace the current research that's out there, which was the academic. It's a published research, if you will. So some of the sampling research related to firefighting and cancer is listed below here. John Hopkins has some information here from 2005, University of Cincinnati. And where it becomes more relevant is the newer stuff that's coming out and being published. The Office of the State Marshal indicated some chemicals during overhaul 2011. The National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health 2013. Illinois Fire Service Institute as well, a couple years back. And then also the latest one here is the dermatology data collected in 2017. So before we get into our routes of absorption, this is just some background general information. There are a lot more publications associated with firefighters and their risk of cancer, and we're going to see here the different rates or the different methods in which cancer can be acquired with our firefighters. So just some key information on that. I will pass this along to Chief Meyer next.
Good morning, Commission. Michael Meir, Assistant Chief of the Houston Fire Department. I'd like to thank you and my team for the opportunity to co-present today, and I hope that everybody finds something useful out of this presentation and what we're going to share today. So the three routes of absorption when it comes to firefighters and cancer is going to be absorption, ingestion, and inhalation. And so I'm not going to read the slide to you. Instead, I prefer to provide some solutions, opportunities for your firefighters to reduce the threat of cancer. There's no silver bullet in reducing the threat of cancer. It's going to be a multidimensional approach, as we'll see here as we go through the slides. Absorption. I believe now it's common knowledge that as the body increases in temperature by 5 degrees, your body is able to absorb 400 times more efficient. We're not going to always be able to reduce the body temperature in bunker gear. I believe we understand that. So what can we do to reduce absorption? Fire wipes are becoming very popular. Impressing upon our firefighters that showering immediately after an incident and cleaning themselves, especially in your most vulnerable areas, which is the neck and the groin and the armpits, will significantly reduce the threat of cancer. Inhalation. Now, many departments are considering N95 masks, coveralls for particulate protection, and using four-gas monitoring to measure the atmosphere to ensure that it's safe to continue with post-fire activities such as salvage and overhaul. However, the gold standard is SCBA protection. You cannot improve your protection beyond the SCBA. So we suggest that SCBA in full PPE during post-fire incidents or post-fire operations is the most prudent act for firefighters to take. Ingestion. How often do we find our firefighters cleaning their neck and their hands before they go to rehab? Very, very rare. Perhaps that should be something our incident commanders, our middle management, our line officers, the one who truly influence the field personnel. Perhaps those are the ones who should be held accountable and enforce the policy and the idea to reduce the threat of absorption and ingestion by using the fire wipes, cleaning your hands, neck, prior to doing any rehab activities and introducing nutrients and hydration into the body. Life safety initiatives. We've indicated a few here. If you'd like the full set, we'd be happy to share it with you. I'm going to go over the life safety initiatives more in detail with the next slide. So fire service changes. Industry changes with PPE. What's driving it, and what are those changes? Well, the fire service changes. We're focusing more on longevity. There was a time when fire departments considered TPP the ultimate concern for firefighter protection. 35 may have been the minimum standard. However, if we go more, we can offer more protection. So slowly over the years, TPP began to increase. But now we're considering longevity. Particulate protection is gaining more focus in the fire service and in the PPE industry. Fires are decreasing, yet firefighter deaths are increasing. Why? Modern fire dynamics is showing that the amount of BTUs in a fire is almost doubled with modern construction compared to legacy. And why? It's because of all the synthetics and petroleum-based products that they're using in furnishings and building construction. Now, what's significant about that? Those contaminants are sticky. They're attaching themselves to the gear and our firefighters. There is no point in fighting pension reform if firefighters are not going to live long enough to enjoy their pension. In Houston alone, the average firefighter does not see past their 10th year in retirement. I would say it's not too different for other fire departments who face a busy system. So that's why the fires are decreasing, yet the deaths are increasing. It's because of cancer. How is cancer driving change in the fire service? Well, again, the shift in TPP to particulates. The standard of PPE and SCBA in post-fire activities. Gear cleaning. We have to begin introducing or seriously consider introducing the standard of gross decon on the fire ground. The industry is using the term preliminary exposure reduction. As members exit the IDLH, they are immediately scrubbed with water, dish soap, scrub brush, low pressure nozzle. Now, how much does that reduce the threat of cancer? How much of the contaminants does it remove from the gear? Should it be considered a part of NFPA 1851 as it goes through its amendments? Well, studies out of Illinois State University have shown that PER, preliminary exposure reduction, reduces the contaminants on the gear by up to 85%. You couple that with gear cleaning at the station or routine and advanced gear cleaning, then you have significantly reduced the threat, in addition to the full PP and SCBA and post-fire activities. Hood gear exchange program. Remember, the neck is the most vulnerable area. Hoods are within reach for most fire departments. A second set of PPE, what does that look like? And we all know with budgetary challenges in metropolitan areas, that's going to be out of reach. Now, here's one I would really like to impress upon fire chiefs and the commission. The term IDLH has been used for decades. And what does IDLH mean? Immediately dangerous to life and health. And what does that health part mean? Acute medical problems. You cannot escape the environment. You might become incapacitated. But again, what is killing most of our firefighters? Reports from the CDC and the National Fire and U.S. Fire Administration, show that cancer is becoming the number one killer in firefighters. So perhaps we should amend the abbreviation IDLH to IDLHF, immediately dangerous to life, health, and future. And we could begin to incorporate that into our policies so that way we can address the cancer. How is the industry changing? Here's another piece I'd like to impress upon the commission. NFPA 1851 is considering the verification process for ISPs every other year. The industry is pushing for every year. How can we verify that the smaller companies, and I know the NFPA is concerned over smaller businesses who may not be able to compete with large corporations like Lion or Globe and other corporations. However, if we're truly concerned about the safety of our firefighters and the value of our lives, should we not consider an annual verification process for ISPs to ensure that all of these contaminants are truly being removed from the gear? That's the basis of our presentation. I'll be happy to accept any questions, and I'm sure our team will be available after the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Would you like to add anything?
A closing remark. I failed to mention the chair of our committee is Madeline Sharma. Commissioner Sharma, thank you very much. And she was going to offer some closing remarks. But before she does, I just want to draw your attention to the references that we used, because I've heard them cited at the legislature this year. And one of them in particular was the LeMaster study. It's a meta-analysis of firefighters and cancer. And the other is the Daniels et al., which is the 30-year retrospective study of three metropolitan cities, and those were that was one in particular that highlighted the discovery, if you will, of firefighters being at a higher risk for mesothelioma than the general population. So, Commissioner Sharma.
Thank you. We have a great group on the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee. Everyone is very excited and has a lot to add. We're still open to anyone else's suggestions or ideas or additions to our work, so please feel free to get in touch with any one of us. Our names are on this PowerPoint, and I'd like to make a motion to have this PowerPoint passed. Or before that, does anyone have any questions?
Dr. Garcia, you had mentioned that data collection is voluntarily reported.
Yes, as indicated, we're only as effective as the data that's introduced into the system. So a lot of the cancer cases that have come forth have been voluntary, as mentioned in the slide. So perhaps if we had a more accurate or way to retrieve that information, then we would even have more accurate discussions.
Any other questions?
I don't know if that helps. I don't know if that addressed. Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, your motion is to have this entered into the record.
We only are publishing on the website. as an action guideline, so just to have it entered.
Okay, so the motion is to enter this in the TCFP website for all members to be able to view?
Yes.
I second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Discussion?
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I would add is if they can, when they, like any other ad hoc committee, when they have their meetings, if they could just be posted. That way, if anybody wants to participate or you know, have input.
Okay.
As we would any other of the committee meetings.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. One thing I would like to say to all the members of the committee and Commissioner Sharma, y'all did a great job with this, and I appreciate all the hard work that y'all have done with this. I know y'all have had numerous meetings and a lot of email discussions, so thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Item number 9.
New matters from the commission, staff, or public, which may be discussed in future commission meetings.
All right. Are there any new matters that anybody would like to bring forward for future meetings?
Commissioners, Danny Kistner, McKinney Fire Department. I would just ask once again that the commission consider adding a future agenda item, Life Safety Initiative number 9, which calls for the thorough investigation of all firefighter fatalities, serious injuries, and May Day events. We've discussed this in the past. I would just like to have another future discussion on it as well.
Okay. Any questions or discussion? Okay, Tim, you add that to future, our next meeting?
And that was number 9, right? Initiative
right,
number 9.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Any other
one? Maybe a comment and maybe for Commissioner Sharma or Chief Kistner. Related to Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee, would that be an appropriate, and maybe this is up for discussion, and not today, but for purposes, appropriate for that committee to review our injury reporting and maybe to create a five-year analysis of the injury reporting, being this is our fifth year? What I'm looking for is, you know, I feel that we've got great data, and we've got it in a great format, but we're not presenting it well. And in presenting it in a form or fashion where we're really, you know, asking a committee to overlook the 5 years of data to create a presentation that could be either put on the website or presented in each one of our regions. Not a certificate class, no money, you know, I'm just talking about something that we could either present or that we would be able to have a North Texas, South Texas, whatever, the commission could put on a course that has, you know, a three-hour deal that's just for this purpose of going over 5 years of collected data. I'm looking for a committee to maybe do that. And I mean, the work you're doing is excellent work. I think that's the most important part of what we need to do right now is this. But that's just maybe a something that kind of been bothering me. I always try to promote the injury report. And it's tough to. I'd like to see more out of the injury report, especially a five-year analysis of trends.
Let me ask the Commissioner Sharma and the committee members. Would y'all be willing to take that on?
Yes, I think that is something we can definitely do, and we have a lot of. You know, committee members, everyone on the group is excited and wanting to work and very committed to it. So I think that's something we could definitely do. So is it a 3-hour in-person?
Oh, no, it could be two.
Okay, yeah, got it.
It's whatever you guys come up with. It's something we can do either as something we can send out to do online, but at the same time, it would be nice to have a course, a presentation done by the commission in different regions so that, you know, people would attend it and be able to learn from the trends that are developed by the Health and Wellness Committee. I think it falls in line with your mission statement, too. So
exactly. another thing, one of our biggest issues is getting accurate statistics. So with everyone's departments, if it's not reported to workers' comp or in any other form, if you have a case, maybe you could help us letting us know your story. We'd love to hear. You know, we'll keep everyone anonymous. We just want to know more accurate numbers.
Director Butler.
Well, just referring to Commissioner Gonzalez, y'all remember we did in a workshop session a while back this past year, we talked about the challenge with trying to take this data, these reports that we've actually been doing since 2010. So we have 9 years now of good data, and it has been a challenge to make this of interest to fire departments to where they'll take the data and use it. And there's a lot of great data there that they could use. I've had a few opportunities in conferences to present anything that we can do to get this information out there and to get it marketed, if you will, I think would be a great benefit to us. And we certainly welcome anyone taking the information and reviewing it and helping us with that effort.
Marketing is the correct term. I think that's exactly what we're looking
for. For lack of a better term.
That's the right term.
Mr. Chairman, a question. Tim, do we still have a certain percentage of departments that are regulated that don't report at all? Then do we know what that number is and who those departments are?
Well, you know, the challenge has always been, you know, the rule obviously says if it's been reported to workers' comp, they're to report it to us. The challenge has always been whether a department just didn't have any injuries to report during a time period, and therefore we didn't hear from them, that sort of thing. So we do our best to try to check our inspectors when they go out and do an inspection at the department. They'll always visit with them about that to ensure that they're doing that.
Does any of the commissioners have a preference whether this report or this presentation that they do on their findings takes place at a commission meeting or at one of our workshops?
Workshop.
Well, we have a workshop in July at our next meeting. Mm-hmm. Do you think y'all could accomplish putting together a presentation on your findings prior, you know, for that workshop?
I think we could have something preliminary, yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
I would only add that typically with the workshops, we haven't had any action items. So if it's something that you feel like ultimately might be an action item, you may want to have it on a commission meeting, or include it as an agenda item the next day.
I think I know typically in the past we have had some presentations that were acted on the following day at the commission meeting.
Correct.
So we can add that to the agenda in the event that there are. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. Discussion and possible action on future meeting dates.
That was very good. What are you guys doing?
It's Deb.
July 17th is your workshop. July 18th is your commission meeting.
Yes.
October 24th.
Okay, does any of our commissioners have any issues with those dates? Hopefully you've been able to put them on your calendar and not have anything come up to preclude you from attending.
September.
All right, hearing none, we will stay with those dates. Item number 11.
Matters referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including but not limited to A, discussion and possible final adoption of proposed amendments, new sections, and repeals as follows. 1, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC, Chapter 427, Training Facility Certification.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mike Wisco, Firefighter Advisory Committee Chair. Item A1 came from you all to us. We're sending it back up with a recommendation not to adopt this change.
You want to go into it further?
We can.
Let's do it.
I was going to wait and see if anybody was going to ask. We continue to try to evaluate all proposals put in front of us based on the current standards in place and the impact to the firefighters and the citizens across the state of Texas. The committee felt unanimously that this would open the door to allow entities regulated by this commission to come forward and ask for exceptions to our rules. We don't believe we want to open that door. We've been challenged many times in the past, both our committee and this commission as well, and we've held our ground. You could take any number of our rules as an example of what could be challenged, and we don't want to establish that precedent. If this were something that was going to be affected by all educational institutes, that would be a little different scenario, but this is specific to one.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you for your work on the advisory committee and the members. I guess the question, when you say open the door, I kind of feel that related to TEKS, we opened the door because we've allowed the TEKS Pro Board issued by TEKS to be accepted by the commission without a test. I think we've already accepted TEKS as the primary training provider in the state of Texas and allowing them to take Pro Board tests and supplement those for commission certification without taking certification tests.
And I think we would agree with that. However,
so why is this different than pushing this right in? You say open the door. We've kind of opened it for TEKS.
Good question. It was because when this was accepted to accept Pro Board, it was based on the standards that were in place, which required the instructor certification. Quite honestly, nobody was there at our committee meeting to present the hardship and the need for this to be allowed. And that's why we want to maintain the standard in place.
Maybe respectfully ask Nick Harrison if he would kind of give what you think is the – I see you standing there, so I guess you want to talk.
Sure.
But see what you say is the hardship and the necessary need for it.
Commissioner Gonzalez, Nick Hickson, TEKS Hazmat Training Manager. The statement was just made on the fire instructor, and if you read the wordings, we're still requiring the certifications in the discipline being taught and the certifications in the instructor in line with your current requirements. In 2014, Texas Commission on Fire Protection approved the reciprocity for Pro Board certification as a process. This just allows for the same approval for the instructional staff to teach. Currently, we're still asking to request TPA numbers on every class that we teach. It will still have the TPA requirement. The only difference is we're asking for the instructor to be looked at with the reciprocity of the same certification requirements, but on the Pro Board in absence of an IFSAC certification.
Let me ask you one more question. If TEKS instructors have a Pro Board instructor certification, would that not be reciprocity to a TCFP certification?
Yes, sir.
I mean, just turn around and issue them pay $85 and issue them a TCFP certification for the most part?
It depends on
the date of the test, I guess, right?
It would be, yes, sir. It would be depending on the date of the certification pre-reciprocity. So when we have instructors that we hire subject matter experts from other states or private industry, what they would then come over. So it's not so much on the instructor certification as it might be for hazmat technician and some of the other classes being taught on where they were when they did do their certification, whether if it was pre-2014 or post-2014.
So, when you're putting on classes and courses and things like that, I mean, I guess this is the need for this is to create a hardship in finding instructors, especially in specific discipline areas. Is that maybe an issue or across the state, different regions of the state that you guys put on classes?
So we, for example, we execute the HMEP grant for the state of Texas,
right,
through the Texas Division of Emergency Management. It's about $1 million a year of free hazmat training for any public service responder, state level and below. Many fire departments in this state utilize that grant for free hazmat training at about $1 million a year. So they can have us come to them, or they can come to us, and we will do a, for example, hazmat incident command class, hazmat technician class, and so because that grant is actually utilized for all first responders with multiple disciplines, so law enforcement, public works, as long as they're state level and below, for municipalities. Not all of our instructors have the 1001 firefighter one, which is a prerequisite for hazmat technician.
Correct.
So they might be a subject matter expert that had 30 years experience in the field with multiple responses, but be from private industry.
Correct.
Or they might be from another state that might have been a pro board state. So we're still utilizing instructional staff that is what we would consider a subject matter expert, still requiring them to have the pro board certification in which they teach, with all the prerequisites of that, according to the NFPA standards, and the equivalent in instructor, so still the same NFPA standard for instructor one and instructor two, to be the lead instructor or a guest instructor.
Do some of your instructors live out of state, work out of state, and possibly bring them in for some of these HMGP?
Yes, sir. We have currently three instructors that live out of state that do several classes for us. And then we also have several instructors on the full-time and adjunct staff that came from industry, for example, petrochemical.
So currently without this, and maybe a Chief Wisco question, without this, would those private industry and state, out-of-state training providers be required to get a TCFP instructor certification on a TCFP required course?
Probably defer that question to the agency.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
they're the ones that review that. Yeah.
But the real challenge, I think, for TEKS in this case isn't necessarily the instructional staff, the instructor ones, if you will. Our rules allow for training programs to use what we call guest instructors, who may be subject matter experts, that sort of thing, to teach the courses or to teach part of the courses. The real challenge for them really is when it comes to the lead instructor position. There, it's much more specific as far as having to hold TCFP certification.
Those guest instructors have to be teaching under that.
They are teaching under the
credential. That person that has that discipline to instruct that particular class.
That's correct.
How many cases does this apply to? I mean, people, numbers.
Several. It would actually affect the, in our case, the HMEP grant. When y'all granted reciprocity, we saw across the board the change to pro board certification so they can send it in on reciprocity. As a matter of fact, we have not been requested to do a hazmat incident command or hazmat technician class through a TCFP certification since that, due to open enrollment style classes. The communities are trying to train with other members that they'll respond with, law enforcement, public works, and so forth, because that grant that allows them to have all the free hazmat training affects them also. So to get their 12 student minimums, that allows them to reach out to partners that they'll respond with in the communities.
No, I'm in instructor-wise. How many instructors does this apply to? Hundreds? Dozens? What are we talking about?
Closer to a dozen than 100.
Okay.
So we're asking for this solely. We're still following the NFPA standards. We're still delivering NFPA standard classes. We're just asking for this for the lead instructor to deliver this training for the community. It's really about the firefighters and the all hazards response aspect in the state of Texas.
Let me ask a question.
Yes, sir.
For Tim, sorry. When you have a guest instructor come in with a expertise in a certain subject matter and he teaches, let's just say it teaches, does the lead instructor have to be at the school? Or if it's just a, let's say, 8-hour portion of a tech class?
I don't believe there's anything in the rule that requires them to actually be on site while they're doing that instruction. No.
So we're doing this now, you know, with guest instructors on with specific expertise, but now we're just trying to make a rule that just allows no lead, them to become lead instructor.
Well, again, what you're seeing in the proposed rule language there includes both instructors, course instructors, and lead instructors. Both of them are addressed here. Although, again, the real challenge for any course is making sure that your lead instructor has the credentials they need.
Right.
Because your course instructors could be guests. They could be guest instructors. Again, the rule language is covering both here. But the one that is probably most important, I would think, to Teeks would be the lead instructor issue.
So,
and I may be wrong, but I would.
Let me ask this one question real quick to get clarification, because I think we've always been under the impression that you had to have a instructor two person to be lead to, and then every instructor had to be instructor one through the commission to be able to deliver those courses. Now, what is the difference when you say, okay, we can bring in a guest instructor, and that TCFP person does not even have to be present in the class? I'm trying to understand what the difference is here.
Well, what I was alluding to is there's nothing in the rules that say the lead instructor has to be present. That is rule language that y'all may or may not want to consider. In 427.307, item D actually addresses guest instructors, and it says guest instructors are not required to be certified as instructors. So it allows for that type of instruction to occur. The way we've always managed that is with the understanding that they're teaching under the credentials of that lead instructor. But again, there's nothing there in the rules that I'm aware of. I think other staff may want to correct me that specifically says anybody has to be present when the instruction's occurring.
What would prevent Teeks or any other entity that may be delivering a course 300 miles from that location of that entity of having that lead instructor stay at the site at their, whether it's, say, Teeks, for an example, and just communicate by phone with these guest instructors that's 300 miles away?
Well, you've just described a loophole in the rules. So, you know, again, y'all may want to address that sort of issue.
Tim, where did you say that was at?
427.3. It's actually
page 29 on D.
Yeah, there you go. Page 29 in your notes there.
Mr. Chairman.
Letter D.
If that in fact is the case, does that solve y'all's problem?
Yes, sir. When we reached out for guidance from Texas Commission on Fire Protection, we were told that we must have a lead instructor on site of the training. That's what we told when I personally called. That's what was described to me after I looked through the rule language. I called for clarification, and I was told the lead instructor needs to be on site.
Again, that would be how our staff is currently managing that. It would make sense that they would be. It would make sense that wherever the instruction is occurring, wherever that program is being delivered, that would be the case. There's no rule language specifically addressing that. That is how we've been managing it, but there's nothing in the rules that says that.
I guess I have some concerns with that, Tim. If staff is managing it outside of what the rule says, they're making requirements outside of what the actual rule says, I have an issue with that as a commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, we're dealing with implementing rule language or lack of rule language every day. And this is one of those instances. It happens on a regular basis. Y'all have not adopted rules to address every situation that occurs. And so we have to make decisions internally as a staff to address those things that come up. It's one of the reasons we bring rule proposals to y'all on a fairly regular basis, because we run into situations where it does need to be addressed. This may be one that you want to make the decision to address at some point.
I can understand what you said when there's not rule language that's already
correct
and specified. I can understand having to make those judgment decisions at that point in
which
time.
Is what we have here.
But well, I don't know about that, because there is actual rule language.
There's nothing in the rule that specifies whether or not the lead instructor has to be at any given location. There's nothing in our rule language that I'm aware of that specifies that. So we had to make a decision internally as to how we wanted to manage that. In the absence of rule language, we had to do that.
But if we're telling people, and as Mr. Hickson alluded, he called the commission and they said, and verify this, Nick, did they say you had to have instructor one instructors and an instructor two lead, or did they say you could use guest instructors?
When we request a TPA for a class, we have to enter the instructional staff information in for each class that we teach. We request a TPA. It does allow us to use a guest instructor, which we've utilized, but they have told us, and on that conversation with the Texas Commission on Fire Protection staff, that we needed to have a lead instructor present during the training at the location.
Okay. I would say, in terms of agency statements by employees, you know, people don't rely on verbal statements from employees when they're lying to go about their business. It's very clear that if you're going to rely on a government statement, it should be in writing if you're going to rely on it. Here the staff has brought it to your attention now in the rule, and you can address it if you believe you need to or not, now that this issue has come to light. So I will agree that staff often has to make these types of lying calls.
Okay.
Thank you.
Chair.
Yes, sir.
A question for Chief Wisco. Sorry, I did not get to attend the advisory committee meeting. Was any of this brought up during the advisory committee meeting prior to your recommendation, the committee's
recommendation? This discussion just took place. No, but internally, the discussion was that essentially what they're asking to do at Teeks is already allowable by rule. Our objection to this and our objection today, or our recommendation not to adopt this, was based on that fact. They can already do this, just like any other training institute across the state or anybody else. IAFF or anybody else that teaches in Texas falls under the same rule. So our reservation and our objection today was that we're going a step farther and we're allowing one entity to deviate even from what's already in the rule. And we couldn't see that as being fair or even upholding the standard that we have in place today. It'd be no different than me as the Galveston Fire Chief coming to you and saying that we just can't deal with 1851, and I'd love to have an exemption that I'll buy gear that's as good as I can get, but that's all I can do. You wouldn't do that. I would hope you wouldn't do that. I don't think we would. And that's the way we view this. What they want to do is already allowable, and they do it every day. To remove that requirement of that lead instructor to be certified is where we did not see that as being acceptable.
Thank you.
You have something else, Nick?
Yes, sir. And I just wanted to point to the language. We're not asking to remove the requirement for the lead instructor to be certified. We're asking for the approval of the 2014 when y'all accepted reciprocity for Pro Board. We are still requesting that the instructors be certified. and in my opinion, a step further than what the current rule is. And we're still requiring them to be certified, but we're asking for them to be certified through the Pro Board certification to be accepted just like the reciprocity is currently.
Commissioners, Jim Reedy from the TSAFF. The question, I guess, and then a comment, a point of information, the IFF is also an accredited Pro Board agency, and they teach classes, the actual hazmat classes that TEKS teaches also. They teach them in the state of Texas, because I know they've been to San Antonio, and they haven't had that issue. I'm guessing they're meeting the same criteria that we have in the commission standards to teach here. So I don't see that we should make an exception for one group and not any other groups. FDSOA is an accredited Pro Board agency. NFPA has accredited Pro Board agency classes. The arson investigators are also an accredited Pro Board agency for their classes. So, I mean, just doing it for one doesn't seem particularly right. And I don't think it's an issue for those agencies. So.
Commissioners, to clarify on Pro Board and teaching in Texas, each state has one Pro Board accredited agency. For me to go to Louisiana and teach a class through Pro Board, I have to request permission from LSU per class. So when the IAFF comes into Texas to speak, they still go through TEKS. They have to reach out to the state training director at TEKS and request permission to teach in the state of Texas.
But now I'm curious, would Louisiana require you to have a lead instructor on site while you're teaching the class? I mean, that's generated an interesting question.
Commissioner Steelman, if I was to go to teach the class in Louisiana, they would require the Pro Board requirements for testing and certification. So they would be required to have those certifications at which they were teaching and instructor.
Commissioner Steelman, I think, you know, in light of the new information, it seems like this is increasing the standard.
Yeah, I'm
this proposed language would putting more hardship on TEKS or requiring additional information based off of Pro Board certificates that those instructors offer.
Right.
So we're not, you know, this isn't a TCFP test. This is a TEKS Pro Board test, and with reciprocity, this could be the fact that we're requiring all their instructors to be at least Pro Board certified. I don't know. I mean,
I'm already new information. I've been an instructor under the commission for 20 years, and I've always been under the assumption that the lead instructor had to be on site to oversee the program or the training.
It's kind of like we could have lead instructors that are hosting classes.
That's been our practice.
Yes. Correct. So you could almost have a host of a series of classes. One instructor hosts a whole bunch of classes.
Right.
At different locations. I don't know.
I have a question for legal, Andrew. Sorry, Dad. Reading number one and two there, if we have somebody come in from LSU, Louisiana, Pro Board issuing, should we have the issued by TEKS at the end of one and two there? Because it really, to me, that says that the Pro Board credentials would be issued by TEKS, not just any Pro Board issued in the other 49 states.
I mean, that is an interesting question.
I'm glad I asked it.
Can I just clarify the Pro Board's situation?
I'm just getting clarification on the wording of the
messenger. Okay.
Yeah, but if you want to clarify the Pro Board, I'll be.
Well, the situation is Nick has said, and let me say right now, okay, I am going to recuse myself from this vote because I work for TEKS, and I do not want any conflict of interest, okay? For LSU, it's no different than TCFP, okay? The commission, the commission has the right to do the certification for
state of Texas.
The state.
For the state of Texas.
And the state. We are the pro board provider. We have first refusal in the state of Texas. Okay? So when the IFC does come to us and say, we've been asked to teach this class, we can either refuse that or we can say, go ahead, and we will issue the certification. Or we can allow them to go ahead and they can issue the certification. Okay. Same way with if we go to LSU or LSU comes into this state. The one provider per state has that right of refusal. Okay, so you know what they're saying about the IFC, they can come in, but they have to get approval. You know, all of this is in light is, as Commissioner Stillman said, I mean, it there's some new stuff coming into focus here that we have not dealt with in the past.
Commissioner told me, may I answer your question on the why it says by TEKS. In 2014, Texas Commission on Fire Protection actually went through our training process. TCFP staff came to College Station and watched several classes being conducted and skills testing. And the reciprocity was done because of the inspection and audit, if you will, because it seemed like an audit process of the TEKS Pro Board certification process. So that's, to my opinion, why they added by TEKS, because of the TCFP staff coming in working there through that process.
And again, I think it's important to be clear, just so to make sure that y'all are seeing this. What this calls for is these instructors to either meet the applicable sections in here, which are addressed in 427.307 earlier in that section, hold TCFP certification for, as an instructor or instructor, whatever. Either that, or it would provide them the opportunity to hold a TEKS Pro Board credential that is seen essentially as equivalent by this commission to these others. That's really what you're seeing here. So it's providing a little more flexibility to those people who are already holding these. And again, they're going to have to do one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
My question to Andrew basically is, if we just end the sentence there in a discipline-specific pro board credential instead of issued by TEKS, wouldn't that capture the other 49 states? That's what I'm asking. Like, we're putting this in here that, to me, I'm reading it that it has to be issued by TEKS, not just a pro board credential issued by Pennsylvania or New York. Okay. See what I'm saying?
If you're doing that, then in a sense, that's already addressed in the guest instructor clause, if you will, at least for instructor one. For course instructors, that's already addressed. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's considered an expert in their field can be brought in as a guest instructor, regardless of what credentials they might hold.
One question. If we remove the TEKS at the end of that sentence, okay, what does that do to the pro board cert, you know, the reciprocity for pro board certification? Does that open it up that all pro boards,
yes,
will be allowed by the commission?
Yes, that's what that would do in my mind, is that if that's no longer going to be a restriction, if you will, on using this, then a lead instructor who holds pro board credentials from anywhere could serve as the lead instructor of a course. That's what that would
for a Pro Board course.
But does that also, let me ask you.
Right, but only for a Teaks Pro Board
course. Yes, what I'm saying is anyone holding any Pro Board certification from anywhere could do that.
Correct.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
So, you know, I feel with the new language and what we've discovered, and when you presented this to us last meeting, brought it to the table to ask for this, it was solely for guest instructors. And I really feel like that guest instructor is under 427.307D. What concerns me with this is we look at the numbers and we know how much work has been increased on staff. And now adding another component that they have to look at to make sure when the TPA comes in, is everybody there certified for the commission? That's easy to check. Now they're going to have to look over here. That's adding more work to them. And I think with the new things that come to light, I just move. We move this back down to the firefighter advisory, let them look at it that, because obviously they voted unanimously, and I went back and listened to the tapes. I couldn't make the meeting that they voted to not put this component in there. And so I just feel if we're going to, you know, with everything that's came to light, let's move it back down to firefighter advisory and let them look at it. Because I can tell you as it reads, I'm not for it, because when it was initially brought by you to us as the board, it was for guest instructors, and that's answered right here in D.
Got some folks up here.
Did you make that in the form of a motion?
Yes, I make a motion that we move this back to firefighter advisory for further review with the language of looking at if lead instructors should be on site and see if it fits as it reads as a rule now.
Can I add something to that? Should it go back further than that to curriculum and testing to make sure that the intent of the process is being followed correctly, to tie back to the original NFPA standard that we're trying to comply with in terms of the lead instructor being there or not being there? I mean, I think that's the ultimate question we need to answer before we move forward with any of the rest of it.
And how staff is addressing that.
I agree.
We can certainly put that on their agenda for their next meeting.
If it passes.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second to send this back to the advisory committee to look at this language, but also to look at requirements to have lead instructors on site for all classes. Am I correct in that, or are we saying just TEKS classes?
All classes.
For all classes. Okay. Is that correct?
That's correct.
We have a second. Do I have any other discussion?
I had one question. I just want to know, for an instructor to obtain a Pro Board certificate, what, and not the TCFP, what does that involve? Is that a 40-hour class? Or?
They have to attend the course. They have to take the Pro Board exam to be certified in that discipline.
Okay.
To get an instructor one Pro Board, the same thing. They have to attend the course and take the exam.
So there's, I just want to make sure that's what I understood correctly.
Okay. Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Any further discussion? All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add that based on everything that's been said here today, we appreciate the discussion and the debate and the opportunity to look at this in a more holistic way as opposed to just one angle of it, and we'll do that.
Appreciate it.
So thank you.
All right. Next, 11A2.
Matters referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including but not limited to discussion and possible final adoption of proposed amendments. New section repeals as follows. Number 2, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC, Chapter 449, head of the department, fire department.
recommendation from the advisory committee was to adopt this. That was not a unanimous vote, but the vote was such.
Quick synopsis of what that conversation was like?
I could pass the sword to the one abstain, or the one opposed.
Jason Collier with Firefighter Advisory Board. Just walk in. What was the... Why did I oppose it?
Right.
I felt that, I know in our area, we've got a lot of volunteer departments going paid. They're bringing in a paid one or two individuals, which means their department head may end up going that same route. I just want to make sure that, talking with Tim and them, that we have those avenues that maybe you had a volunteer chief that's been there in that 7 year, and maybe he's been to eliminate his position just because he can't combine a couple of items together. So I don't know. That's kind of where I... That's why I looked at it that way.
Thank you.
Move for final adoption.
Okay, we have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Motion and a second to move for final adoption. Any discussion?
And this is saying they must be commission certified. Is that correct?
If using the option that addresses certification, we're talking about commission certification.
Yes.
All right. Hearing none, any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
There. 11B, report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee with discussion and possible action on recommendations regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. A, update reference list for hazardous materials awareness curriculum. B, update reference list for the hazardous materials incident commander curriculum. And C, update reference list for the hazardous materials operations mission-specific competency curriculum.
Commissioners, we reviewed this with the Curriculum and Testing Committee. These are all updates, as we see often in the past, and we recommend adopting the changes.
Just new books, new edition.
Yes.
Do you feel the due diligence has been done to make sure they're available? Because I know we run into that from time to time where the book is no... I mean, you're telling me it's as of today, everything's current.
Yeah, and we had that discussion.
And it's no $2,000 book and right. Stuff like that, because that gets kind of crazy.
And clearly, all that's out of our control. But, right. But as of our last meeting, everything was good.
Any questions?
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve for adoption. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next. Item 12, report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee regarding the review and evaluation of the International Code Council Inspector Certification Program.
Do we have anybody from Curriculum and Testing?
Thank you.
All right. Seeing none. Item 13.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 KAC Chapter 429, Fire Inspector, Subchapter B, Minimum Standards for Plan Examiners.
You good on this one? You want to go with it here? You want a break? This may take a few minutes.
Want a break?
Anybody need a break? Y'all want to move forward?
Move forward.
Move forward.
Move forward.
Okay. Commissioners, what you have...
Do you need a break?
In the notebook, you have the existing rule language. So pages 50 to 54 is just the existing language. There are no strikeouts, no changes in that. What we've included with the next three pages are, and I'm going to call them suggestions from staff. The idea is that you'd be considering some kind of grandfathering language for people who meet certain criteria so that they could obtain plan examiner certification. So that's what you're seeing on these last three pages. The pages in all address 429.201, that section. And as you look at each one of these, the only difference between them is, yeah, I'm sorry, it's the handout.
Yeah.
It's not, I guess.
Everybody
it's not,
has a handout
I'm
in front
sorry.
Of you.
I thought it was in your notebook. So the only difference between the three versions, if you will, is how far back y'all might want to go with somebody's test grade to allow them to get plan examiner. So before we kind of get into the weeds on this thing, what we were hearing, the feedback that we were getting from folks out there regarding the idea of maybe grandfathering was you had folks who perhaps didn't get their IFSAC seal at some time in the past and their exam grade has expired. So you've got that group back there that can't apply because of that currently. You have a group of people who have been perhaps serving as instructors in training programs, inspector training programs forever, who may have gained certification way, way back, who now can no longer teach like a plan examiner course because they simply didn't have it, and yet they've been teaching it as part of the combined program for a long, long time. So you've got that group. And then you also have individuals who may have been appointed or assigned to plans review duties for years and years and years, who have not had, for whatever reason, that plan examiner component, for instance, as part of that. So as you look at each of these versions, that's really what's getting addressed here. So if the first one, option one, if you will, and again, these are nothing, please see this, these simply as suggestions from staff. We got the feedback, and we wanted to try to get that down in some kind of suggested language, but these are certainly not set in stone as far as that goes. You know, however you want to change them, you obviously could.
Tim, is this voluntary certification?
It is now, yes, sir. It is
because it was from our last vote.
It is a voluntary certification at this time. So if you're looking at what I'll call option one, that first one there, here it's allowing a person, so anybody who holds a current inspector certification could qualify for one of these if they meet the criteria. Letter A basically is saying that if the individual passed the plan examiner section of a fire inspector exam at any time, they could apply for plan examiner. We have the grades all the way back to January of 2005 when the plan examiner actually became a part of the state exam. You're looking at 3,574 people who have passed that test over the passed that section of the test over the years. So that'd be your impacted group there.
Can you pause right there, Tim? To keep from a loophole from occurring, when you say grades all the way back to 2005, are you talking about an average grade? of Inspector 1-2 and Plans Examiner 1? Because at that point, we calculated average grade, not individual component grades.
Correct. Yeah, that was for state certification.
So when you say have passed the test, you're saying have passed the average of the test, not the individuals. But you're going to go back and look at the Plans Examiner only portion of those tests since 2005.
We did. As soon as all of that got adopted way back then, we see all three grades.
Okay.
There was an average to determine whether somebody could qualify for state certification as an inspector, but we have all three grades. We have all three sections. So here we're looking only at the plan examiner component in this version.
Correct. So when you took those tests, when you sent the information to someone that said, hey, I passed my fire inspector state test. All right, and it had three components, fire inspector 1-2, and plans examiner. That person that you're issuing a certificate to may not know that they did not pass the plans examiner portion, but passed overall.
They may or may not.
They may not know that today.
Yeah, they may or may not. Yeah, yeah. Depends on whether they were interested in getting their IFSAC seals, for instance.
Okay. Sorry.
So it... If I could just run through these Please. Other two. So that's version one. That's option one. And again, the other two, B and C there, those are where someone who's been appointed to those duties, they could submit a letter. The chief could submit her a letter on their behalf saying they were, or someone who has served as an instructor in an inspector program. Again, we'd be looking for a letter from the coordinator of that program. Going to option two, what you're seeing is an individual, in this case now an individual who passed the plan examiner section on or after March 1st of 2014. What we did there is you adopted this new rule language for plan examiner. It became effective March 1 of this year. So now we're saying go back 5 years. Instead of going all the way back to the very beginning, you can go back 5 years. Anybody who passed that section of the exam from then forward, you could. Again, just a suggestion to consider. You have 1,474 people who could be impacted by that one. And the third one would be individuals who passed the plan examiner section of a fire inspector exam on or after January 1 of 2011. And what that would cover is anyone who would have taken a test that included plan examiner based on either the 2009 or the 2014 edition of the NFPA standard, NFPA 1031. So that would be what that one's picking up. There you have 2,574 people who would be impacted by that if you went back to that date.
Are there any of these, in your opinion, if adopted, that jeopardize IFSAC accreditation?
No.
In this field?
No. I think we would be okay with this. Yeah.
Question?
Well, let me ask this. Could people that have IFSAC...
They can apply. They can apply
right now.
Yeah, there's a group out there who have IFSAC seals for plan examiner. They don't even need this. They can simply apply. There are people out there right now who have taken the inspector test in the last couple of years who have an active test grade and they pass the plan examiner component. They could apply right now. So these are just picking up folks who, for whatever reason in the past, the way that the current rule language is written, they're going to lose out, if you will.
So if I'm understanding this right, so I passed inspector at some point in the past. I was assigned a plan review a week ago, and I can be plans exam certified, right, by B.
If they have been assigned or are assigned,
regardless,
that's the way it reads right now. Yeah, you're right. It could be someone who'd been assigned in the last week. You're right. Yes, the way it's currently written.
And I don't know what the appropriate duration would be to say you're competent in that. But just curious.
Anything else that you can...
That scenario may include somebody that doesn't have a plans examiner as part of their inspector training. If they got certified before 2005.
Could.
So that's the only downside to that.
Exactly.
Okay, let me make sure I'm clear on this. Currently, there's people that are doing plans examiners in cities that aren't certified. Correct? You know, PEs or whatever they are.
I would assume there could be.
I can answer that.
Yes. Okay, and we have no regulatory authority over those folks.
Our rule language doesn't address that. So,
and we've made this voluntary.
Because of that.
So can someone that's in the fire service take Inspector 1 and Inspector 2 and do plans examiner without this certification? Because they're currently out there now, because it is voluntary.
Okay. As it stands right now, yes.
Mike? Commissioners, Mike Wisco, Firefighter Advisory Committee. This inspector certification is a gift that keeps on giving. To go back, you guys collectively appointed a subcommittee last year about this very topic. We met. I personally left the room under the intent and moved forward on this issue that, as in the past, when any rule change occurred, we would grandfather everybody prior to that rule change that was already a plans examiner. I look around the room, and unfortunate for me, there's only about five people in here who were here before 2005, and I'm one of them. When we first added plans examiner to the inspector testing process, we had to go through a one-year grandfather phase because you had fire inspectors who had been doing plans for 30 years before that, and they were up in arms that now they were going to have to get a certification. So we gave them 1 year to get that. Honestly, as this came from our committee to you all and it was adopted, it was my intent and it was my understanding that we were going to grandfather those folks.
Right.
After everybody got it and started reading it, which is historically what happens, nobody pays attention to what we're doing until it's done. My phone was about to blow up from people saying, this is going to cost me $35,000 to inspect my plans examiner, or to certify my plans examiners now. And I said, slow down. I think we need to have a conversation about this, because that wasn't the intent. So I'm not trying to complicate this. What I'm trying to say is I think somewhere in there we missed in the translation, and we made it difficult for staff to interpret what was ultimately approved, that everyone prior to March 1 should be grandfathered for this. They've already jumped through the hoops to obtain it. They should be able to keep it.
Thank you for those comments, Chief Wisco, and you're exactly right in serving on the committee. But, you know, I think we could also get lost in the 17 different versions that we had. So at some point, it was in there, right? And somehow the section that we passed, it was not in there.
Right.
So I apologize, you know, to all those out there that saw that on my behalf sitting on this board, this commission, that didn't get included. But we do need to fix that and remedy the situation. I think a couple things in addition to what's being provided here is we did discuss eliminating the fee during this grandfather period as well for those folks, especially who had 3 months ago had a plans examiner certification and now they don't because we're not issuing it to them, or they had taken the plans examiner one portion of the test and now we should issue them a certificate at no cost.
No. Is that true?
What do you mean?
That's what he just said.
Well, there are people who have taken the plan examiner component of the test and passed. Whether you want to say that they automatically qualify for the certification, it's up to y'all whether you want to charge them for it or not.
I think they qualify, as far as I'm concerned. They already jumped the hoop.
Well, as I mentioned, you already have a group out there who do qualify.
Yes.
Anyone who passed the plan examiner component of the test and they still have an active test grade, a test within the last 2 years, that entire group qualifies for plan examiner certification. I think the question on the table is whether you want to charge them for that search.
I think it goes further than that. I'm talking about here, fire inspector curriculum, plans examiner was added to fire inspector curriculum and the exam on January 1st of 2005. If I took my state test January 2nd of 2005 and I passed the plans examiner 1 portion of that test, why would I not be eligible now for a plans examiner certification? That's simple.
I agree.
That's option one. That's what you're looking at, right?
And would I be issued, and I don't want to charge them for that certification that they
that's
already
the other
passed
on the table,
and thought they had.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my point.
Yeah, you're describing option one.
Okay.
That's really what you're
doing. We just
doing
need to add
allowing
the
anyone who
exemption
ever passed
of the, fees.
The plan examiner component, would they qualify for the certification? So the question is whether you want to allow them to simply apply. Yes. Without the fee.
That makes sense?
Absolutely.
Commissioner Perez?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay. Sorry, I had to lay it out.
We do with the grandfather.
So moved.
If I could, and this is an important point just made, I think before y'all do anything, you have a number of people who have already applied for this and paid for the certification.
Yeah.
Because they had a valid test.
Credit.
I think you just 200.
262.
262?
Yes.
For plans examiner only, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We have 262 people who now hold plan examiner 1 certification, and the fee was not waived for them.
$85.
So I would caution you to consider those people as you do this.
You're going to have go through all the comptroller problems to try to get that money refunded, I'm telling you.
Yep. Depending on how they paid for it.
Right. I'm not happy that we got to that point anyway, because I think the intent was very clear on what we wanted to do from this
yes.
board. I'm sorry, but it was. We may have passed the language that we had 3 versions in front of us. I take that responsibility, but it still shouldn't have gotten this far.
Someone's grandfathered. Does that mean they have to apply for another certificate?
Usually, and grandfathering also waives the training at some point, usually.
It also what?
The training. Like if they were previously trained and they don't have a valid test on file, it allows them to apply without redoing that.
This one really is different than other ones that y'all have ever addressed in the past, because it actually existed as a part of the test prior. Anytime we've introduced a new certification, which is what this is, it is a new state certification, anytime we've done that in the past, it didn't exist before that.
That's right.
And so what we had for a year was a period where people could, again, the chief of the department could submit a letter saying this individual has obtained training that meets the NFPA standard for this. It allowed them to then challenge the state exam for the new certification and then apply for certification.
Well,
you've got a slightly different scenario.
But the ones that have applied, those however many, what did you say,
260?
They applied. They took the test and paid their fee to get the certificate.
Or they had an IFSAC seal that was received at some
right.
point in the past.
So I don't view that as in the same category as these other folks, that they took the test too, but a long time ago.
Well, I can't say for sure, but some of these 262 may have been people who took the test 10 years ago.
Okay.
And got an
IFSAC seal, and now they've applied for state certification based on that IFSAC seal, which they can do. So you could very well have people who don't have active exam grades in that number. They got it from way back.
I have a question for Andrew.
Andrew,
you said we would have trouble, and I understand that with the comptroller for refunds, but I know, like in the past, our department, we've paid and have overpaid or something, so they just credit us. Is that something we could?
I don't know the details. I just know it's probably going to be a problem, and you might want to look into that before you overpromise. You may be able to do it with the funds. I'm not an expert on, you know, the budgeting and how much you can take back and how much you can take out and moving it around. I just know it's a pain.
Let me ask Andrew an additional question. So would there be any provisions in authority today for us to suspend collecting further fees related to this topic?
we're looking up the fee statute.
Yeah, that's right what I was going to say.
I don't think anybody's going to be harmed if you don't collect a fee. I think the but nobody's going to have standing to complain about not being charged for a test. But your bosses may wonder why some money isn't there if your statute says you're supposed to be collecting it and you aren't.
Well, in essence, we did collect the fee a long time ago.
Yeah, we're just separating. We're taking it
only for a test.
We're taking a certification and separating it into two parts that you already had.
We didn't charge a fee for the certification
originally.
We charged for the test, but we didn't charge for the certification.
Once they tested, they applied for and received a state certification for fire inspector, period.
Correct.
Now you have a separate new individual state certification for plant examiner.
But plans was part of fire inspector at that time. So they paid an $85 certification for inspector, which included inspector 1, 2, and plans, correct?
And assuming they passed plan examiner, you know, if we're wanting to talk, yeah, I mean, you think about how this thing rolls, you could literally pass one of those three only. You could fail two of the sections and still have gotten state certified as a fire inspector. It's conceivable. You score a 90 on one of them and you score a 68 on the other two sections, you could get certified until January 1 of 2017 when you required all three to be passed. Then that was the case. So.
And they could have been doing that job since 2000.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
To give you an answer to the question, the statute says you shall set and collect a fee for each certificate that the commission issues or renews. Your rule says you will charge a non-refundable application processing fee of $85 for each certificate issued. You could adopt a rule, though, and comply with the statute of having a fee of, for example, 1 cent.
Oh, don't do that to my IT guys, please.
Okay, 2 cents.
Right, but you could come up with a very low one for this particular time period in order to induce people to get it now, or you believe, you know, it's necessary. For this one particular one, you could have a lower fee. You could define that in this rule.
But based off of today's agenda, do you feel we could not take action based off of the agenda placement related to this topic of the fees?
Correct. I mean, I think you should probably delay to the next meeting if you wanted to address the fee issue. I don't think anybody's really had notice on it. I do think you have authority to adopt a fee. The fees for this particular inspection in this one if you wanted to. I don't think it necessarily needs to be in the chapter on fees, but, you know, somebody might not really have notice of that. But again, who's going to be harmed by putting a low fee for this particular one? So, you know, I think it's unlikely somebody would challenge you on this. Who's going to complain about a very low fee?
No, we would have to allow executive director to set that fee. I don't think we could set that fee today. We would have to set it in July. Unless you tell me we can set it today.
I mean, the better course would be to set it at the next meeting, post this with whatever you're going to do, and set the particular fee for this particular certification. You can either set that fee in this chapter, or you could set it in your rulemaking, your rule on your chapters on fees.
And that may be what we need to do, Tim, to keep it two separate agenda placements. Because yeah. This has got to go to advisory, and it wouldn't even go to publication until... I mean, I don't know that we have the detailed language for me or anybody else sitting up here to tell you what we're looking to put in this to put it up for publication.
This is just for publication at this point.
But if we're making significant changes like waiving fees and
but
the dates.
But this is the very first start.
Okay. Right.
So you'd be okay.
All right.
You could include it. If this would be your final version today, I'd be uncomfortable. But if you were going to include that as part of this process moving forward and let advisory consider it, I think you'd be fine.
What does it cost us to issue out these certificates?
$85. The application processing fee for a state certification is $85.
No, she wants to know how much what does it cost the commission in time and manpower to do.
No, I haven't done that analysis in some time. I couldn't tell you.
Have you guys received any complaints from, say, the 260 that qualified, having to pay another fee? And
I don't.
I haven't.
Yeah, I'd have to get with staff to ask them.
Yay, I get another certificate, mostly.
Let me ask you this. Would this be something that we may want to table until the July meeting so we get all of the facts and all of the information that we need to make an informed decision?
I would probably disagree. I'd like to go ahead and get it out of here and get it to advisory. Let them hash it over so we could still table it in July, but we might have final language in July and move this thing quicker.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Commissioner Gonzalez, just because, and I know where you're saying about people are doing the job. We've been doing it without plan examiner, but it's affected a lot of educational institutions of teaching to where they had people signed up for classes trying to get TPAs, and that's when it was discovered. So I agree with Commissioner Gonzalez. We need to.
I made a motion earlier.
You did? I didn't hear
it. Heard it or not.
No,
I didn't hear your motion.
I move that we adopt or forward item one to the advisory committee.
Option one?
Option one. They can massage it a little bit, but those basic pretenses.
I'll second with a comment, if you would.
Yes.
And if you'll accept that.
Sure.
And we would request that the Firefighter Advisory Committee look at, one, the specific date of Section D will expire on September 1st of 2020, whether that's sufficient time by the time this gets adopted.
Right.
I don't know that September 1st, 2020 is sufficient time. That it may end up less than a year. We want to be sure that we have a full year for these folks to apply. And then number two is look at a reduced fee option or no fee option as well.
Well, I think that has to come under another item. Okay. But, yes, I agree.
I would add, for additional clarification, the statute says we're supposed to set the amount of the fee in the subsection amount designed to recover our costs in connection with his credit certificate. So I think that went back to Tim's point when we looked this up, and I don't remember particulars of the rule change the last time around, but I remember we did fees somewhat recently, and Tim did have all that data and gave you what the numbers would do for each output.
And I think number three for me, one more, was in what you brought up, Commissioner, was is there a time frame for work performed?
Yeah.
As part of that review from the Firefighter Advisory Committee.
In my opinion, I would strike B altogether. I don't see how an assignment establishes confidence or training or anything for that matter. Just because you're assigned something doesn't mean you know what you're doing. So
I agree.
I would just get rid of B. That's my personal opinion.
Well, and B has a lot to do with people that have been performing it for 30 years, you know,
and
versus 1 year.
Sure, exactly.
That never took the plans.
I wanted them to massage.
Hang on a second, guys. We're getting into the discussion phase.
Yeah, sorry.
We haven't officially have the motion the way it needs to be said.
Yes,
you're right.
So, Tommy, you made the motion and you've amended the motion.
That's correct. Just to add three items.
Okay, so do you accept his amendment?
Yes.
So you've seconded the motion?
Correct.
Okay, please, somebody tell me what this motion is, right?
Basically, is to send it back to the advisory committee to massage option one with three caveats that he recommended.
Correct. The three caveats were look at the date for September 1st of 2020 for expiration. Look at a timeline for category B, which is what is a sufficient time for plan review assignment prior to 2005. And three, I'm trying to remember what it was.
Fees,
thank you.
That may be under another.
That could be under another.
I don't know if that needs to be under this one or not.
So we have a motion to accept option one with the caveat of taking out item D, September 1st of 2020, or reviewing that date.
Correct.
Right.
On item B, reviewing and determining a proper amount of time?
Correct.
And then fee reduction for the people that were grandfathering in.
That's correct.
And if I could, just to be clear, when we're talking option one, for the record, we're talking about the one where A reads, the individual passed the plan examiner section of a fire inspector exam at any time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, so any discussion? You had discussion earlier. Do you want to...
I'm happy with the discussion that occurred earlier.
Well, the discussion that occurred earlier don't count.
Yeah, it does.
No, but we I'm now good. Have it.
I'm fine.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And I'm kind of like Chief Wisco, a gift that keeps on giving.
Yes, it is.
All right, let's move forward. Is everybody good? Do we need to take a break? Can we finish that?
I think staff needed a break a while ago. Can I ask a quick question while we're still on the inspector topic? What was the decision or the should we suspend issuing any additional certificates from this point going forward to keep digging a hole that we may have to fix later down the road?
I agree.
I'm just saying, since this is all kind of in limbo, why do we want to keep throwing dirt out of the hole and allowing?
I'm open to direction from the board.
You know, if we're required to charge some kind of fee and we can't set that fee today, we could just tell people we can't issue your certificate till this is resolved.
Exactly. I mean,
you can submit, but don't pay and don't. We're right. Not going to issue your certificate.
Right.
I would say that the item for discussion is changes to the rule. We don't have any further, you know.
Okay.
If you want to suggest, a change to the rule in terms of stop or go, we're not going to implement this. I mean, that's a suggestion. But otherwise, we're limited to discussing proposed amendments to the rule.
Excellent.
Understand.
Okay. All right. Item 14.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 PAC Chapter 439, examinations for certification.
Commissioners, the changes being proposed here are on pages 63 and 439.19, and then the following page 64 in the table. It really just has to do with setting more specific criteria for the number of pilot questions on exams.
Move for publication.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to move for publication. All in favor, or any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Can we go back and clarify that? I do want to clarify this right quick. Going back to the previous agenda item, I'm assuming that is to be published. Firefighter Advisory Committee will obviously review it during that time, but it is to be
published.
Okay.
Yeah, for publication.
Okay.
Item 15.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 459, Fire and Life Safety Educator.
Commissioners, with this one on page 68, we're removing language now that is, this was the special provision period for FLSE 1. We're removing that. It's past its expiration date. So that language is coming out on page 69. We were approved by IFSAC to issue IFSAC seals for FLSE 1 and, in fact, also FLSE 2 on page 71. So we've added language for that.
We've got a motion to move for publication.
Second.
We have a second.
Second.
Discussion.
I
Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 16.
Discussion and possible action regarding the addition of classes or courses to the A list and B list for higher levels of certification.
So you have a fairly extensive list there. We had someone submit a number of courses to us for our review, and Sylvia spent a good deal of time reviewing the courses. And so she brings those to you for your consideration to be added to the A and B lists.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Would this be for publication?
No, these we would just adopt. Yeah, yes. This would be immediate.
Get added immediately.
Yep. Okay, for adoption of proposed additions to A and B, the A and B list. Discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 17.
Discussion of the 2018 data collected on firefighter injuries and possible action on developing recommendations to be submitted to the commission for approval and submission to the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Good morning, Commissioners. Grace Wilson, Public Information Coordinator. And, well, we have the next injury report for you to review. And this is just a draft. I assume you'll be seeing it again in July. So if you've had a chance to review it, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Grace, so page 105, and that's the recommendation section. Is that what you'll be looking for to be inserted in there in the July meeting?
Correct.
And that would be what I would hope also we may get as part of the Commissioner Sharma's Health and Wellness Committee is maybe some recommendations that they could provide as well as a starting point.
That would be great if they could address that. Again, these recommendations are to the Texas Fire Service. That's the idea here.
Yeah.
Okay.
This would be good. We can definitely make a few recommendations. Do we have until the July meeting to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This has to be submitted to the State Fire Marshal's Office August 31st, I think, is the deadline.
Like that. Mm-hmm.
So the July meeting would be your last meeting that you'd be able to take action on it.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Any other questions or discussion?
Thank you, Grace.
Okay, item 18.
Discussion and possible action on matters from the Executive Director. A, decisions of the Executive Director in contested cases and consent orders.
Nothing to report at this time.
Okay, item 19.
18B.
Or 18B, sorry.
Status of division functions.
It's been a busy year.
Yeah.
So far, it continues to be real busy. Just a couple of notes to point out. We certainly testing and certification issuance have been truly at all-time highs. We are going to be well above what we've seen in past years, and it continues to do that. I will mention that the online testing program that we instituted last May continues to grow. For the quarter, almost a fourth of the exams conducted were via the online platforms. We are adding new partners every day, testing facilities that are willing to deliver the exams for us. The number today is different than a week ago. We are literally adding them that quickly, but I think we're probably approaching 30 different institutions, testing centers around the state And that's really been our goal, is to try to get as diverse geographically as we possibly can, and we're getting there, certainly getting there. So I'm real pleased with the way that program's going. I guess the other thing really of note just has to do with things that we're tracking in the legislative session. We, of course, did our testimony before the finance committees. Betty mentioned, where the current two budgets sit with regard to our riders, so we're keeping an eye on that. We have a number of different bills that we're watching. I was actually over at the Urban Affairs Committee meeting this morning before I came back over here. They were hearing House Bill 518. Please make note of that. That particular bill allows individuals holding inspector credentials other than TCFP certification to do fire inspections in the state of Texas. There was testimony both for and against the bill. It would appear that the bill will move forward. I think it's pending in committee right now. I understand that the bill author was looking at perhaps bracketing the bill to smaller population areas, that sort of thing, to allow smaller population areas to do that. But it's certainly one that you'd want to keep an eye on going forward. That will impact our certification issuance, I'm sure, at some point. So, aside from that, I'm happy to answer any questions I can.
On the IFSAC accreditation, some of the issues, do those have anything to do with some rules that need to be tweaked, or just...
IFSAC issuance?
You have in here that the IFSAC accreditation inspection or review, there were some issues, minor issues needing to be addressed.
No, those were minor issues that were really taken care of while the site team was here. Very, very, very minor issues.
No rules.
The review went very well for us. So it was we had a real positive report from the IFSAC site team at the end of the process. So we're reaccredited. We're good to go for another five.
Okay. Item 19.
Executive session pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.074 1 for discussion of personal matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of the executive director, and the appointment, employment, reassignment, or duties of personnel acting on an interim basis in this position.
Does anybody see a need to go to executive session? Okay, hearing done. Item 20.
Open session for further discussion and possible action regarding preceding agenda item.
Is there any further discussion? Any from the audience? Commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, so, and I see it's in here, Tim, but we talked about the compliance guide. Have you guys gotten any of the new compliance inspection sheet?
If I could go back to that agenda, I should have mentioned that in my report.
That's what this is for, yeah.
Okay, so that was agenda item.
It was 18B.
Yeah, I should have. I apologize. Included in your report there is the new inspection form, if you will, that can be used by departments for preparation for inspections. It is significantly more comprehensive than the previous one that was available to departments. We are doing our best to get the information out there to make sure departments are aware of it. It really is going to serve some good purposes for us, I think. Number one, it makes for better inspections, more consistent inspections from one department to the next. But it also allows departments to know exactly what it is we're looking for when we come in. I will mention that there's nothing in this more comprehensive list that wasn't already there in the NFPA standards. So here we're just spelling it out in more detail for departments to be able to use. So I think it really will be a help going forward. Again, we're trying to get the word out there as quickly as we can to let departments know that it's there, that it's available, and that our team, compliance team, will be using it when they go out.
And I like to commend your compliance guys on that. And, you know, I know us as a board, we had charged them with you know, really paying attention after what surfaced in Houston and other places on compliance inspections. And so far, got a lot of good positive feedback. But I appreciate you clearing it up, because that's some of the calls I got was, it's like, no, it's all the same information, just a different, more, you know, instead of just saying follow this NFPA standard, it's here's what you need to follow in the standard. And I mean, for me, I know you have several new ones around the state, but it's, in my opinion, they're doing a good job.
Good. Yeah, I appreciate you bringing it back up. I needed to mention that. So, yeah, I commend Paul and their team. They did a lot of work on that thing.
Mr. Chairman. Tim, have y'all noticed a large amount of failures in the hazmat portion of the certification testing?
There has always been a large percentage of failures in that. It just didn't begin showing up, if you will, or really get reflected until January of 2017, when we started requiring all the sections to be passed. That's when it really came to light. People began paying attention to that.
What do you think that's about?
Oh, I think it can be any number of different things. It could be an emphasis or lack of emphasis in training programs. It could be that individuals aren't spending the time they need to study the material. We have, as staff, we've worked hard to review questions in those test banks to make sure that they're within scope, that they're reasonable questions, that we're not asking something beyond the awareness or operations level. So, you know, we feel like we're in good shape in terms of the test banks. It's really, I think, as much as anything, a matter of students and training programs making sure they make the adjustments that they need to.
Okay. I just was wondering if y'all had looked at that.
Oh yeah. We've had a number of discussions with various groups about it, and we'll continue to do so, you know, so we can get better.
Thank you.
You bet.
Any other discussion? Item 21.
Adjourned meeting.
My favorite.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second. I have a motion, a second, and a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much I thought we had some good discussion today.